As you know, this lesson, we've been going several weeks on it. We'll still do several weeks, but it's dealing with the words "let us" in the book of Hebrews, and kind of each one kind of builds on another one. But when we finish this particular series, I'm going to continue through the book of Hebrews. We're going to look at the word "better" in the book of Hebrews. And this week I started looking up a concordance out and looking at the word "better." The number of times it's found 13 times in the book of Hebrews. So something to look forward to. In chapter 1, verse 4, referring to Jesus, so much better than angels. In chapter 6, verse 9, we are persuaded better things of you. Chapter 7, verse 7, the less is blessed of the better. Chapter 7, 19, bringing in of a better hope. Chapter 7, 22, a better testament. Chapter 8, verse 6, a better covenant. Also in the same verse, 8, verse 6, a better promise. Chapter 9, 23, better sacrifices. Chapter 10, verse 34, a better and enduring substance. Chapter 11, verse 16, they desire a better country. Chapter 11, verse obtain a better resurrection. Chapter 11, verse 40, some better thing for us. And then chapter 12, verse 24, things that speak better things than that of Abel. So I don't have these sermons done yet, but I'll get these up. But I just thought we'll just go on and look at continue this theme in Hebrews, and I'll get you a kind of a detailed outline of like this one on the word "let us," and we'll look at the word "better" through the book of Hebrews. And tonight we are on point number 7 in the list. Number 7. In chapter 10, verse 23, let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. Interesting study. When we look at Hebrews, now we've been through this before, even in going verse by verse through the book of Hebrews, but it's lessons for us, and that's why you let us, and so we who assemble on Sunday night, there's a message for us, and it's encouraging. It's a word of exhortation. These words are uplifting. They are moving us along in our faith. Let us. And so I hope you can recognize these as very practical lessons for us. Just for kind of an aside, I always like to do something like this on Sunday night in the lessons. And hopefully, there's something valuable for us that will encourage us and want us to come or even attend on Sunday evenings. I remember, I don't want to ever diminish, the lessons at all. I remember years and years ago, there was a couple that came all the way from La Mesa. They were good friends of Palmer and Audrey, Bill and Hazel Woods. And they lived in La Mesa, and they'd make the journey on Sunday nights. They would attend with us. And I always thought, I said, boy, I don't want to just come and just, we'll just have a couple songs and just a little polite message, then go home. I don't want them to spend more time on the freeway, than they do here. But they always sat right up front, and back then I would be sitting right in front of them. And Bill, one time, he thought he would play a trick or a joke on me, and so when I stood up, I always left my sermon notes in the seat. Now we're standing up and singing a song, and sure enough, so when I got up here, my sermon notes went from page, he took the two middle ones out. My sermon notes went from page 1 to page 4. And I knew right away, I looked over, I could see him, and he just a grinning. Big time, thinking we're going to get out of here early. But I fixed him. I ad-libbed. Bill and he's it was just him being humorous. But point number 7 in the notes, let's hold fast the profession of our faith. And then the added phrase, without wavering. For he's faithful that promised. These are good ingredients The profession of our faith, our hope, and again, that's not just a single statement. It's not just the one we made prior to when we were baptized. This is an attitude of life, a statement that we're going to make as we live our Christian life. Situations will come up in your life and mine where I'm going to be called upon to let other people know on whose side I stand. Let people know that it's my profession of faith. Let people know to whom I belong. So let's hold that fast without wavering. Be decisive. Be determined. Don't be wishy-washy. Because he's faithful that promised. What God says, he will do. Our faith is not just believing that God can. It's believing that God will. Everything that he's promised. I know he can, but my faith says he will. So number 8. In chapter 10, verse 24. Let's consider one another to provoke unto love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the custom of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. So I put in your notes, one cannot live the Christian life successfully in isolation. There's no such thing as hermit Christianity. We're not to live our lives secluded. We're not to be a recluse. We're not to live a Christian life alone, with the doors closed, the shades pulled. We are a light that's set on a hill that cannot be hid. We are salt of the earth. So he's saying in this, let's consider one another, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. Christianity not only has one another, but it has let us. So we are required to be involved in the lives of one another when called upon, in various ways, whether it's ministry or service or just encouraging. Let us, and take that personally, let Brian consider the other. Do that. Take thought of. When you consider something, you think about it, you perceive, understand, you take into account, you got to chew on it, you consider one another, look out for them. And then he mentions to provoke one another, it means to stir up or nudge, get that image, it means to stimulate, rouse, poke, motivate, move. So one task I have is not to make sure that I'm going to hold fast my profession. I need to be sure that I encourage you in yours. Consider one another. Provoke to love and good works. Take that into account. In Hebrews 6, verse 9, what does love and good works look like? Here's the example. Here's the model. Hebrews 6, beginning at verse 9, says, Beloved, we're persuaded better things of you and things, I don't know what things that accompany salvation, though we thus speak. For God is not unrighteous to forget your work and labor of love, here's the specifics, which ye have showed toward his name, in that ye have ministered to the saints and do minister. And we desire that every one of you do show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope unto the end, that ye be not slothful, but followers of them who through faith and patience inherit the promises. And one of the best times to fulfill this obligation is in the assembly, when we assemble ourselves together. And that's the admonition here. What better time to consider one another and to provoke to love and good works than here? So we encourage you, come early, stay late. We pull in all the resources that are available to us, the Bible classes, the friendships, the fellowships, the gospel meetings, the vacation Bible schools, the work parties, whatever we have, use those so we can consider one another. not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. You know, this time cannot be repeated. And we're going to meet again next Lord's Day, Lord willing. But what happens here tonight is not going to be reproduced exactly as what took place here tonight. So you need to be here to hear the exhortation or to give the exhortation to someone else. That's the value of assembly. And that's what God has called us to do, and this Hebrew writer is doing. Yeah, we're the church scattered, but on the first day of the week, we are to become the church gathered for a specific purpose, not only to give our worship to God, but to give consideration of one another. And I'd rather do it in a group assembly than have to get in the car and go to everybody's house individually. That would take a lot of time and effort, and you may not be home. Especially if you see me coming. You may run. But the idea is, what better time than right now to encourage? You have to be here to enjoy this time together. You have to be here to receive the encouragement or to give. So don't forsake the assembling of ourselves together. And this is as the custom of some is, and that's not a compliment. And we all know people who forsake the assembly almost on a habitual basis. But he says, provoke each other, not forsaking the assembly, and then do it so much the more as you see the day approaching. So we want to use our time correctly. Use it wisely. And our encouragement needs to be over and over. So much the more. What we're doing, do it again. Never, and I put in your notes, never minimize the value of assembly. And I hope people can see that. I know this kind of a lesson, I'm preaching to the choir, so to speak, that expression. But some people think the assembly is optional. That something comes up or it's kind of trivial, oh, it's okay. To miss. And I want to emphasize assembly. You know, I know I'm the preacher, but still, if I can encourage you, instruct or educate the value of assembly. Because what happens here cannot be repeated. Number 9, we'll stop after this one. Number 9, in chapter 12, verse 1. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us, here's the obligation, here's the charge, let us lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily besets us. There's a great cloud of witnesses. And the writer in Hebrews chapter 11 has just given an imposing list of Old Testament heroes. And so when he's giving this opening in chapter 12, verse 1, it's kind of a metaphor or a figure of speech or symbolism. But anyway, the lesson is, if you think it's real, the metaphor is of an athletic contest before a huge throng in a coliseum, and these witnesses correspond to the spectators. The idea is there are people watching us as we strive to live our lives in Christianity. It's kind of like a figure of speech where in history Napoleon was told to have said to his army in Egypt, he says, soldiers, or ye soldiers, 40 centuries are looking down on your deeds today. It's kind of when Hebrews says, you know, we're compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, it's probably symbolism or it's imagery, but it was a common expression, and we even sometimes use it today. And it means that we ought to act as if we're in sight of those who've gone before us. The lesson that he's giving when compassed about by so great a cloud of witnesses is that others have lived successfully their life of faith before us. There's others that have passed on before us, and they were the ones that taught us. Therefore, imitate their faith and don't let their labor be in vain. We are compassed about by a great cloud of witnesses, those people that have preceded us in faith. they bear the testimony to the certainty of success if when we imitate their faith. You think of the history of this congregation. I do this every so often, but sometimes I hesitate to do it because I leave somebody out. But we have faithful witnesses. When I first moved here, there were several people that were aged in the faith. You know, Nan Wilson, Lila Burke, Margaret Ackerman. Boy, that was a trio. Well, and I even just saying their names, I mean, I have a mental picture of them already in my mind. Wow. C.B. Middleton, Paul and Elaine Steele, Palmer and Audrey Wilson, Ed Hernandez. Even though he wasn't aged in the faith, I keep forgetting, he was 33 years old? 33 years old when he died? He's out in a Westpac in the Navy. In January, he felt some stomach problems and died in August. But he was faithful. It was just amazing when Ed Hernandez worshiped with us, how so many of the young people and the young adults in the congregation moved toward him. It was impressive. His faith. I think of Daryl Wilma Collins, Christine's parents. Edna Pruitt. Remember when she was going through her cancer treatments? They were late Wednesday afternoon and she would have, I can't think of her husband's name. Bert. She'd have Bert drop her off for Bible class on Wednesday night. Just came from a chemotherapy treatment. Gene and Earl Cross. Patty Agbenag. Howard Rambo. In later years, remember at the end, he'd come in with his air. Pull his air on the wheels. He had the heavy tank. Frieda Adams. Buster Woody. Remember when he worshiped with us? All these are, we are compassed about with a great cloud of witnesses. And we need to act as if we are living in their presence. And they're watching us. He mentions two things. Because of these people of faith that have gone before us, we want to do two things. First of all, lay aside every weight. Though these are the hindrances that will hinder successful Christian living. It's the things that get in the way or impede our progress. The weights are not necessarily things that are horrible, criminal, or wrong, or wretched. They're just things that slow down our progress. It's like the athlete, before he runs the race, he takes off the warm-up garments. Those would impede the race. For him to run the race the fastest or the best, lay aside the things that would impede the progress. Same thing with us, and that's what he's asking us to do. Lay aside the weight. Not bad, not wretched, not sinful, but they weigh us down. You know, I don't know a list necessarily of what these might be, but you know what weights are in your life. They are things that divert your attention away from giving God priority. There are things that just slow you down or keep you from really giving Christianity your all. They're weights. So in general, we ask people, what are you doing with your time when it's time for worship? We want to lay aside the weight. Then the last thing I mentioned, and the sin. If there is something really wrong and wretched. Lay aside the sin that so easily besets us. It refers to conduct that's a mortal enemy of our faith. Sins that easily beset us. There's some sins that we can probably just say, no, I'll never do that again. But then there's others that we just kind of hang on to us. They easily beset us. Kind of like when you're wrapping a present, you get that tape on your finger and you try to get it off that finger, and to get it off, now you got it stuck on that finger. And it just won't let loose. They easily beset us. We try to make a clean break from them. We wrestle with it because it's still close, those sins are still close by, or the temptations. They're so convenient. There's sins that easily beset us. Romans 13, verse 14 says, put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. Don't make provision for those things that easily beset you. And you know what they are. I know what they are in my life. So lay aside the weight, the hindrances. Think about those who've gone on before us and imitate their faith. Act like they can see us. And lay aside the sins that's just hard to shake. And that's the value of assembly. So we can provoke you to love and good works. And lead you away from the sin that easily besets us. Or you. So we'll pick up the lesson there 2 weeks from tonight, Lord willing. Do number 10. Again, and always at the close of a lesson, we sing a song of encouragement, a song of invitation. Maybe one this evening, not a member of the New Testament church. If not been baptized for remission of sins, you have that opportunity. We want to ask brethren for strength or encouragement while we're here to rejoice with you in that decision or to lend encouraging words. Well, you know, you may want to just let that be known. So let's stand together. We'll sing the song that Dennis has selected for us. If that's your desire to respond in a public way, just please.